You're listening to the Table Talk podcast, brought to you by Food Matters Live.
Welcome to the Table Talk podcast. I'm Stefan Gates. I'm a TV presenter and writer specialising in food and science. This podcast is all about the growth of an extraordinary and intriguing sector, alcohol-free drinks. And we have a fantastic panel who will help us tear apart alcohol-free drinks, help us understand what they are, how they're made, and what the heck is going on in this extraordinary world. We have Andy Crossan, Consumer Insight Director at Kantar.
Hello.
Dash Lilly, co-founder of Three Spirit.
Hello.
Laura Willoughby, co-founder of Club Soda, the Mindful Drinking Movement.
Hello.
Right, first of all, we're recording this in January, traditionally the month of abstinence. And I want to ask you this, everyone in the room, we have Matt here as well, who's our podcast producer. Who has had an alcoholic drink so far this year? Yet this year?
I have.
Andy has.
Yes.
I have not, believe it or not.
Dash has not, Laura?
I've actually not had a drink for 7.5 years.
Hey,
I'm winning. You. What do I win? Is there
Very
a prize?
And Matt has. And I haven't as well. I'm alcohol free. But that's not really the point, really. But first of all, before let's just sort of lay down the groundwork here. Laura, at the risk of stating the absolute bleeding obvious, why do people want to and why do we need to cut down on drinking alcohol?
Well, actually, what's happening is a bit of a cross-generational shift, which is that the younger people are drinking less. People in my Ladette generation, which is my generation, have realised that you can eat as much kale as you like, but you undo all the hard work if you're knocking back a bottle of wine in the evening. And then in amongst that is a growing number of people who are moderating their drinking. And it's really important to remember that this isn't a trend about sobriety or not sobriety. It's not that binary. It's all about a lot of different behaviours in amongst that, of people cutting down, taking a break, taking days off, and really rethinking their drinking. And I think part of that is because in the 5 years Club Soda's been going, the narrative has changed a bit and it's no longer the thing that you should be ashamed of with the alcoholic word associated with it. But there are people talking about embracing it as a healthy lifestyle, which is what we do at Club Soda.
Yeah. Can you just give us a very brief rundown of what Club Soda is for anyone who doesn't know?
So I've got a background in politics. So my whole career was fueled by cheap white wine and I decided to give up. And when I did, everyone said, oh, how did you do it? I'd like to cut down. I'd like to give up. So I created something that felt a bit like Weight Watchers, but with booze, to be honest. For everyone that I consider isn't a dependent drinker, but everyone who fits into a very broad, very technical category called a bit of an idiot with drink. So that's my polite way of saying it. That's not how I say it normally. And so that's where we sit. But it's grown into this really interesting thing because people started to ask us to ask pubs and bars to stock something more interesting just at the point in time when new products started to hit the market. So we've been doing work with venues on getting them to do more, and they're all listed on clubsodaguide.com. And then we also do the Mindful Drinking Festival, which there is a big two-day one in January, which has over 60 brands at it and over 10,000 people come along, as well as helping individuals change their drinking habits. So it's a whole mix of things, mainly because I get too excited and can't do one thing at a time.
Okay, now, Andy, can you give us a bit of an idea about the scale of the operation? What does the public think about booze-free booze? And is there cash in it?
Certainly. It's been growing in popularity massively over the last few years. I mean, we know for sure that in the surveys that we conduct that 18 million adults in Great Britain are telling us that they're actively trying to moderate their alcohol consumption. So the timing for these products is right, and it's certainly growing, especially as Laura says, it's not quite as black and white as in terms of cutting out or completely. A lot of the time it is about taking a break. And what we are seeing, especially, is midweek occasions for alcohol drinking has declined, especially in the home over as time has gone on. So, yeah, lots of growth going on in this market.
And what about the Dosh? Give us some numbers.
Well, it's still relatively small from a what we traditionally call an off-trade point of view, taking drinks back into the home. It's still in single digits in terms of its share of total alcohol. But the sheer amount of people who are buying into it more, because let's face it, it is cheaper than buying alcohol, is quite large compared to the spend. So in the last year, we've seen 500,000 more households buying non-alcoholic, when we say that, 0 to 0.5% alcoholic drinks, growth grow at that rate this year.
So it's an exciting industry. There's a lot of potential in it, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the key thing that this sector is trying to get over, a key hurdle has been taste in the last few years. A couple of years ago, we did some research to see what is the key thing that is perhaps the hurdle to get over in order to make a purchase in this. And we found that taste was the key barrier. And since then, actually, the top reason as to why people are consuming or choosing non-alcoholic beer in particular is that they find the taste enjoyable. Mm. So the taste and that sort of thing that companies are really focused on has come on a lot in the last few years.
Which brings us straight on to Dash, really, doesn't it? So we're talking about the taste. Now, obviously, water is non-alcoholic. A glass of milk is non-alcoholic. But before going into the nuts and bolts of how these things work, how would you define a non-alcoholic drink? Because it's a specific sector, isn't it?
Good question, yeah. I mean, often, you know, you get people say water is probably hard to beat, yeah. Which is, you know, true, hard to argue with. But I think when it comes to non-alcoholic, the category non-alcoholic drinks, what people are really kind of identifying and talking about are adult drinks, things that are not designed to appeal to children. Therefore, they don't want to just be simple, sugary sodas.
And are they seen as sort of alcohol analogs? Is that the idea, really?
Well, I think there's a lot that is step one. I think you've seen a lot of alcohol analogs, and that is continuing. That is growing rapidly now. We obviously had, you know, it's hard to have this conversation without mentioning Seedlip, who were kind of first to market, did an incredible job, still growing rapidly. Beautiful brand, maybe a divisive product. You know, it's a divisive space, non-alc. Especially
why? What's the divide?
I think, well, it's completely different if you're thinking about the home user and the consumer versus the trade. And so I think a lot of what I do, what we do, we try and satisfy both because it's really important to create a product, a brand that is adopted by the trade, endorsed by the best bars, bartenders, restaurants, culinary industries. However, you're not going to get anywhere if you don't make a product that appeals to consumers. And I think, you know, flavor, price, experience, these are really important factors. But I think, you know, Three Spirit, where I stand, I'm very excited by creating something that is not just a replication of an alcoholic product. So the way I like to kind of say it is, not focusing on what you take out of the drink, you know, like here's a vodka without the alcohol, or here is a beer without the alcohol, but focusing on what you put into that drink, you know, the craft, the care, the love, the flavor, the mouthfeel, the effect. And, you know, I don't think that many people have focused on that space yet. And I think that is probably what we'll see in the future. Mm. I hope is that there's more and more customers out there that become more savvy, a bit more demanding. Now, that said, there's loads of great products out there now. And, you know, I hope that we're kind of trying to push the boundaries of what's possible in non-alc.
Okay. Now, at risk of alienating our entire audience in one fell swoop, can we just talk a little bit about the chemistry of it? So the magic of an alcoholic drink, for me, must be the ethanol. There's something in there that makes an alcoholic drink special and makes it, it gives it that magical thing, the alcohol.
It's a flavour enhancer.
So that ethanol, and is it possible to recreate the flavour compounds or the flavour profile of ethanol without using ethanol?
It's a huge challenge. I think the answer is to some degree you can. You're never going to be able to compete fully with this wonder molecule ethanol. And you're right to you know, pick that out. It is ethanol that is this incredible substance.
Why is it so?
Because it's intoxicating. Because it carries flavor in an incredible way.
Right.
You know, ethanol has been used to extract flavor, not just for making alcohol, but creating flavors for the food.
There isn't
very
much that we ingest in a day that doesn't have traces of alcohol in, because it's been used to extract flavor, or because we ourselves ferment naturally in our stomach. So it's ever present in our world as a natural substance. It's why we can We can process small amounts of alcohol. We're just maybe not quite designed to process as many amounts
so
of alcohol as
rotten
we do.
Fruit will yeah. at some stage.
Bread's got alcohol
ethanol.
In. Even Coca-Cola's got a tiny trace of alcohol in. Fruit that's, you know, the orange juice that's been open in your fridge for a week could go up to 0.5%. So
don't tell my kids that. Don't tell my kids that.
No, well, they'd eat a lot of fruit and nothing would happen to them. So it'd actually be quite good, right?
Oh my God.
Actually, it's not a bad thing. So there is continually alcohol around us, but it's the amount that you put into an alcoholic drink. And it can make some very awful liquid probably taste very good, as well as make some good liquid taste very exceptional.
And so at risk of you know, giving everyone the secrets of your brand and your industry, what are the things that are put into drinks to make up for that magical ingredient, ethanol?
So I think a lot of people in the non-alc space aren't doing anything to try and recreate that magic, which is one point. But I think that, you know, I can really speak from my own experience. Trying to recreate mouthfeel is key. And you've got, so you can't use ethanol, but you've got this wonderful wide scope or palette of ingredients, flavors that can create feelings, you know, through the drinking experience that give you mouthfeel, body. You need some sweetness to carry flavor, some acidity. So there's classic building blocks of putting something together that any great barman or great chef will understand the key flavors to put together to create an explosion of pleasure in the mouth. And so you have to be creative, you have to be open-minded. And that's, again, why I think there's a lot of people in the non-alc space, especially in the spirit space maybe, where by deliberately limiting their ability to be creative because of focusing maybe on replicating an alcoholic drink. And that's where I think personally that some people fall down a little bit, because non-alc, you're never going to be able to compete with ethanol. So you need to come at it from a completely different direction and try and create something that is different, that is standalone. And, you know, we work with really interesting active ingredients, functional ingredients, to go one step further and to try and put a combination of things in our drinks that will also have an effect, a physiological effect, a desirable effect.
And they've got lovely products because of that. And I think it's a wide and broad market, because what you're also looking at is drinks in every category as well. You're looking at ciders, wines, spirits, beers, and even beyond that into kombuchas, which I see as a very good adult alcohol-free drink. What you're looking at as a challenge for some people in just bringing the sugars and the calories down, because that's the motivation of some people. For others, it's about creating the same experience through the way you bottle it. So there's nothing more exciting than opening a bottle of Lindemann's alcohol-free, because it still pops and it gives you that sense of occasion, and you know that this isn't designed for kids, and so it's yours. And so there is that occasion as well. And so people are playing around with a lot of things. I think there's a lot of innovation, a lot of shaking out to do still.
And this idea, I'm really excited about this idea of these sort of overlapping multi-sensory experiences. I think you're absolutely right. It's the pop. It's the design. It's the setting yourself up. Maybe being in a bar.
And this is it, really, which is that when I don't drink, I don't want to be served in a bar with a half a pint of Coke out of a hose shoved at me as if I'm 12 and about to go and wait in the car park for my dad, right? I want to have the same experience as everyone else. And so there are many products that fit into that category for me. Yeah. But it's also about the serve. It's about the quality of the product. It's about the packaging.
Is it about the price as well?
Yeah, in part about the price. Although I am an incredibly cheap date these days. But, but you know, I actually really like a kombucha, because for me it replicates an alcohol-free scrumpy cider. It's not how it's positioned, but that's where it is for me. And I've become an incredible tea snob. And if you want to talk about flavours, then, you know, tea is an amazing product. But I would have all of these, regardless of probably quality, over and above a half a pint of Coke.
Yeah. And that's because it's elevated onto a different level. But do you think, I mean, this world is beginning to mature a little bit, I would say. You know, the Seedlips and people like that have been around for a little while. Are you finding, do you think as an organisation with Club Soda that it's moving away from alcohol analogues to just interesting drinks, the other things you need, or are we still rooted in this idea of the experience of having a booze?
I think it depends. There's a lot of navigating of the consumer to do around this space. They want to understand, and we're not, as an industry, communicating through one message. The government makes that hard by pissing around, basically, with the labelling issue at the minute, which I could bore you for a whole hour on, if you like.
Go on. Give us a one sentence.
The highlight
version
is that technically, if a product's made in the UK between 0.05 and 0.5, it should be called low alcohol, whereas in the rest of the world, it's called alcohol free. And anything that comes from the rest of the world and is on our shelves here can be called alcohol free. The government, Brexit got in the way. The government didn't make the change it needed to. And so it's created this whole state of confusion as well. So you can have a soft drink that's up to 0.5% and doesn't have to be called anything or have anything on its label. But you can't have an alcohol free alcoholic drink that's 0.05 to 0.5 and so on. And now it's guidance. And you'll see that people like BrewDog and everyone are ignoring it beautifully, which I'm always in favour of ignoring the government. I'm hoping they'll change it next year because they too want to promote low and no. And they'll be doing it with one hand tied behind their back if that's what they want to do. But that makes it difficult for the industry. And we did some research looking at why it is that Spain has such a big take up of alcohol-free beer. It's probably around 14% of their market. And that's because the whole industry, drivers groups, pregnancy groups, the government and everybody had a very clear and consistent message around, if you're driving this evening, this is what you drink. If you're pregnant, this is what you drink.
And the message is integrated, and that's what you think has made the change.
Right now, I get more emails in January from people going, oh, it says it's alcohol-free, but it says 0.5%. And I'm like, guys, pick up the Bailey's ice cream in Iceland. It's definitely more than 0.5%, I can tell you. I think it's about 2 units. So, you know, we've got this little issue. And the industry itself hasn't coalesced around communicating as a whole around this sector, and it needs some help, because even for bar staff, the questions that people ask behind the bar are very different when you're not drinking. They ask you the calories, the sugar content, big one, because sugar-free diet's a big driver. They ask you about the ingredients, things that none of us ever asked when it was alcohol, right? Mm-hmm. So it's really important for brands like Three Spirits, which are complicated and got lots of ingredients, that people understand how to sell it, and it's a different sell than we've been used to.
Yeah, okay. Let's have a little think about the market here. So Andy, I mean, is it just sort of young people who are avoiding alcohol, or how's it unfolding across the demographic?
That's an interesting question, and Laura alluded to it a little bit earlier on, I think, in terms of thinking about it in a spectrum, really. For instance, younger people are more likely to be telling us that they're moderating their consumption, while the older brackets are most likely to be cutting out completely. So different reasons falling into this, really, in terms of younger people are telling us that they don't want the feel that you get from drinking as much as previous generations, and then health reasons come into it more as you age.
Okay. And in terms of spending power and how much people are actually spending on it, do you have any details about the sector that is actually throwing money at this?
Well, as I say, in terms of its share within a total alcohol drinks arena, it's still in single digits, really. It's still in its infancy and what it's actually capable of.
Yeah.
But a lot of that comes down to it is cheaper than normal alcoholic drinks, so it's bound to have a smaller share. But the percentages of people that are actually buying into it, of over 10% of the population are taking these drinks home, is quite considerable these days.
Yeah. And any future gazing that you're doing on this? What do you reckon is likely to happen over the next 5 years?
Well, I can only see more and more growth, really. And I'm speaking a lot from a perspective of taking these drinks back into the home. I still think there's a massive opportunity within pubs and bars here. That we're only just beginning to see, say, alcoholic, non-alcoholic beers on tap. In most of the bars, especially in London. And I just feel that is a very big area that can be grown upon, because as Laura says, that there's this area of wanting to fit in social circles and still have a drink, but not with alcohol, and still drink at, say, the same pace as your friends.
Yeah.
So I feel like that is an area that can be capitalised on for sure.
I went into a pub in Camden last night while I was waiting for my daughter to finish an appointment, and there with my dog, and I said, have you got anything non-alcoholic? No, nothing.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely.
That's highly unusual these days.
That's crazy.
Yeah. And
you're going to have to name and shame them to me later, so.
You'll get around there. Laura will be knocking on the door.
We've got cards that you can now leave in pubs that say, do you know, good. Times are changing. Have you thought about getting better, low, and no? Because London's actually pretty good, and our scoring system on the guide is based on what people input in their pubs as to what they've got. And I think we're going to have to raise the bar next year, because so many pubs are doing really well. So it does surprise me. But I'll send you some cards. You can leave
time. Do you hand these cards to the publican or just leave them?
You can leave them. People started to ask us for a way to talk to venues about wanting better drinks or to tell venues that they were really excited by their options. So we've got two cards. You can leave one that says, yeah, you've done brilliantly, join up to the guide. Or another that says, look, have a little look. Club Soda's got the information you need. Times are changing. Really nice. Doesn't say you're terrible. But we've got people
although
sharing
that's
on
the
social.
Inference.
No, just a little helpful hand. It always amazes me because I'm not from the drinks industry. I'm a customer. I thought it was my sole job to keep the whole of the pub industry alive in London for many years. And for me, I often think it's really interesting, the conversation between the consumer and a venue about what's stocked. There isn't actually very much conversation. And so it's really important that people actually begin to say what it is that they want.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I guess the more that people like yourself ask, hey, have you got a non-alc drink?
Yeah.
And they say, that's what will drive, you know,
yeah.
the change.
Yeah.
It's funny. I was at a BrewDog event, so BrewDog's new alcohol-free pub
Saturday,
the other day,
yeah.
which was great. Yeah. And I think, you know, what's going on in the non-alc beer or low and no beer category is incredible. I talk about it a lot when trying to sell my product or educate potential customers around three spirit and what's going on in the spirits side of things. Beer is undeniably like just picking up so
the
much momentum.
Really
it's
in
incredible,
space.
And the quality shift is amazing. I find it incredible what's changed in such a short period of time, that the choice, the variety of high quality beers. And BrewDog did a great job showcasing lots of independent brands as well as their own products. And so I was there, and you know, I'm a drinker, so I don't mind admitting, I don't think I've actually ever done a dry January. And so I'm kind of enjoying this dry January, but it was funny, I was at this event and I was, you know, really enjoying drinking pints, different beers, and it tricks you because you're in that social environment and you do feel a level of intoxication. However, you then feel like you've got kind of superpowers because you leave and you're just clean, crystal clear. And it's this beautiful, you can have your cake and eat it moment, which I find fascinating because I think that is what will begin to appeal to more and more people that do not classify themselves as non-drinkers.
Yeah.
But there's this new choice coming our way, which is quite cool.
I was in one of their bars the other night and they did a very interesting initiative where I bought my first pint, which was a 0.5% beer, and they gave me the receipt back in order to get refills ongoing for free.
Might be their dry gen push.
they're doing free refills. Yeah, it's amazing, particularly if you get the one that's got caffeine in. It'd be like spending an afternoon on the coffee.
But
actually, let's talk about free. Let's get into this whole thing of the cash, because Dash, I would have thought that although Andy was saying that alcoholic drinks are obviously more expensive, I would have thought it probably costs more, doesn't it, to develop an alcohol-free drink? You've got to put so much more effort into the flavour profile.
I can only really speak for our products, which are particularly complex. We put some wonderful, bizarre, expensive ingredients in some of our drinks, like lion's mane mushroom, high-grade cacao extract, guayusa. So we put exotic, bizarre ingredients that often come from alternative medicine or the supplement industry. So
is the exoticism part of the draw that you're creating as part of the brand?
You know, we're trying to create something as different as possible from what existed before. And so we make quite obscure liquids. However, they can be used to make very traditional, well-known serves, which is what is working for the home user. They can use it to make very simple drinks that they are used to making, like a pink gin and tonic or a kind of rum and ginger style drink. Because it's small craft batch, small batches, there is an added expense to making non-alc. I think that probably exists in beer as well, because when you're scaling something up and you're selling millions of pints, the price comes down. So there's one question which is just about kind of, scale and, economies of scale, essentially. But You know, we get a lot of conversations or questions around duty and the fact that there's not duty on non-alc, so therefore why is it so expensive? That's always something that we have to address.
What's the duty proportion of a bottle of vodka? How much of a 750 ml bottle of vodka?
Once you get into a venue, the proportion of your drink that's duty is very small. It's probably only about 50p.
Yeah.
A lot higher, I guess, in the supermarket. I haven't looked at that stat. Yeah. But
I think a litre of pure alcohol, the way that it's done, is actually calculated on ABV.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's no one selling pure alcohol in the supermarket, right? But essentially, I think what it equates to is you've got a litre of pure alcohol would have 12 pounds of duty or something like that. So you do the maths and, yeah, a large proportion of a bottle of gin is duty, which is a lot of I put another question to people that bring up the no duty on alcohol free, which is, it's incredible how cheap alcohol is when you think about it. Now, of course, there's a lot of beautiful alcohol products out there that are priced accordingly. You know, craft gins, which have boomed, and beautiful tequilas or whiskies that are aged. But if you think about, you know, your kind of mainstream vodkas and gins that might cost, I don't know, £14, £13 for a bottle, £12 of that is duty.
Mm.
The bottle probably costs 50p to a pound. The cost of the liquid is minimal. And therefore, you know, that makes me question, why would you want to put that in your body?
But that's the issue to overcome for the industry, which is you want to have a nice narrative around why these are beautiful products that are beautifully made without then, you know, having a go at the cost of alcohol, which at the end of the day can make some really bad stuff taste quite good.
Yeah.
And also you don't have it as a stabilizer or as a preservative in your bottle. So preserving the product in the bottles a lot more. So again, this industry will do better if the whole industry has a very nice, clear narrative, which it feels very comfortable with, around talking around the price point of alcohol-free, where it fits into people's experience. And I think that's a really important thing to come back to, which is people pick a drink by the experience they want. I really like the Three Spirits range because they give me something to take me through the whole evening, which is great. I love that concept that there's something to liven me up at the start of the evening and something to help me sleep at the end, but it's all a drink that I can have. If we can focus on those experiences and just accept and just be able to say very clearly to people, look, you know, a beautiful product, particularly without alcohol in, costs a lot more, and that's fine, but you want to have this because the experience you're having is great, and get some very clear narrative on that. That will really, really help. It will also help navigate the consumer, because they just don't want to feel like they're being ripped off. But when you talk to them and you explain, that goes away. And it comes back to you, which is that there's some really cheap alcohol out there. That's really where people are being ripped off, rather than on the good quality product. But, you know, I can see how that's a difficult narrative for the industry, and where if it's not careful, it needs to take control of that narrative to not only grow the sector, but also not to feel like it's robbing Peter to pay Paul.
So, Andy, let's think about what people have done right and what they've done wrong. Now, I know that obviously you can't really slag off specific brands, although God knows I'd love it if you did. But what have you seen sort of people come and go? Have you seen people do things wrong and do things right? And you know, without talking about the actual brands, can you give us any examples?
Oh, there's plenty in beer that have done a good job and stayed around. Some of the biggest brands who play in mainstream alcohol, such as, let's be honest, Beck's Blue, Budweiser Prohibition that came in a couple of years ago. They've done relatively well, and Heineken have since launched last year as well. I mean, a lot of that marketing, as I mentioned earlier, is around the taste. That is the key thing that these types of brands have to get over and convince consumers of in order to win that space, and that's what they've done well. And being honest, really, wine has struggled in this space. But there's a lot of... It's a bit more of a risk for consumers to buy a whole bottle of wine that is non-alcoholic. Because traditionally, you know, if you're going to open it, you have to consume it quite quickly before it goes off.
Mm-hmm.
And there is quite a lot of liquid. It's a bit of a less of a risk to buy a little bottle of beer, or even a spirit whereby you can apportion it over time.
So wine, let's talk about wine.
I've been issuing this challenge for the wine producers for a while, and it needs to have its own debate because there's something really exciting here, and they're not rising to the challenge. Yeah.
So let's just for any listeners who don't know what's going on, the creating a successful non-alcoholic wine brand has not really happened yet. Is that right?
There's been a few. For instance, Iceberg was relatively quick to the market and still doing.
It's been there a long time, actually. It was there first and has been the staple for lots of people. There's now lots of people chomping at the bit and snapping at their heels.
Yeah. And what's holding them back? Why is the wine sector of non-alcohols not really happened?
I believe there's a couple of issues. You talked about bottle size and single-serve bottles. If you go to Finland and stuff, you can get half bottles of most of the products, but they haven't seemed to have brought them here. Pubs and bars don't want to have a whole bottle of alcohol free because they'll open it for one customer and then end up throwing the rest of the bottle away. So I can really see why that's a barrier to the on-trade.
And again, no ethanol means a relatively short shelf life, I presume.
Yeah, absolutely. And I had a bottle that I'd forgotten about. It was in my house. It was open and it gets mouldy after a short while. Yeah. You can't keep it for very long, even for cooking.
You'd have to have a relatively high acidity to make up for the ethanol, though, presumably.
It was one of the better ones. Yeah. So there's a couple of things. Wine traditionally has been de-alkalized. Through various methods, which obviously takes the alcohol out and creates a particular taste. Then grape juice is added back in. So one of the issues for the wine sector is actually it comes in at a really high in sugars. And I go to so many places where people pick up the bottle and go, I don't want this, it's got too much sugar in. And so in terms of where it places itself in the market, that's a bit of a challenge for it. It will also never give you that same experience of wine. And I think, funnily enough, you can learn to like new things over time. And I now drink alcohol-free wine, but it certainly comes in into its own with a meal, which is not what I was worried about when I was drinking, whether there was a meal involved. So definitely it's got its place and it's got its occasion. Sparkling de-alkalizes better. And the higher up the price range you go, the better the quality, like any wine. But unfortunately, those aren't the ones that you can get on the supermarket shelves quite regularly. And often people still have one sip and don't like it. And even with a normal wine, you would want a couple of sips before you know if you like it. But we don't seem to transfer those rules around, you know, more than one, trying more than one mouthful. And then the wine industry really hasn't looked at wine replacements. So the things that create that sense of occasion but aren't wine itself. So Fortnum & Mason is currently, you know, selling out of their £16 bottle of sparkling green tea, for example. It looks the part, it's a very good complex drink in the bottle, and it's lower in sugars and calories. So, and then you've got things like Shirab that have come out that use shrub as a base to create the acidity of wine.
Oh, I don't know this, sorry.
Shirab, it's created by Mustafa, who's behind Shrub. And he's created this wine alternative. And you've got Nine Elms as well, which is a red wine alternative, which has never been a wine. It uses other things to create that same experience. And I can definitely see that sommeliers are far more interested in those as an accompaniment to a meal than trying to give a wine that they're not feeling very confident about doing a wine replacement. And the wine sector needs to embrace those wine alternatives, those things that come in a bottle and replace that occasion. And then the tech does need to improve in wine, and the wine industry needs to get to grips with it, because actually younger people aren't drinking wine either. So as an industry, it's got a lot of challenges. It needs to find some products to put in the market.
Wine's really interesting because it seems to be a very straight analog. You know, you have a glass of non-alcohol wine. You want it to taste like a wine, like a wine that's had alcohol. Now, when we come to spirits are usually, there's a mixer involved, I guess. Now, one of my favourite personal ones that I use is my homemade elderflower cordial and tonic water, and that's actually a pretty decent version of gin and tonic for me. Maybe it's the bitterness of the tonic that does it. Maybe it's the fact that I've made my elderflower cordial so alcoholic just by making it that it's making up for itself. But do you have a struggle? This is to Dash. Do you have a struggle with working out what people are actually going to mix your drinks with?
Good question.
And are they going to just ruin everything, basically?
Good question. I mean, it's funny. So you know, about 85% of our business is direct to consumer, which is wonderful.
Is that online direct to consumer?
Yeah, through our own website, which is fantastic because we can engage with our audience. They can engage with us.
Go on, give us a quick plug for the website.
As Laura said, 3spiritdrinks.com. And as Laura said, you know, I mean, we have a complicated product and brand that needs explaining. And that's one of the challenges is communication. So we enjoy being able to do that ourselves rather than relying on a retailer, for instance, to do that maybe badly. So we do the best that we can to develop our drinks with top barmen and develop really nice serves that would not feel out of place at the best bars and restaurants.
What do you call it? What do you mean by a serve?
A serve,
or is that just
is
a grammatical abnormality?
How we recommend how to use the product.
A guide to how you literally you put it in a glass.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, you know, for instance, this liquid you might make an espresso martini with, or this you might make a spritz. So we would recommend kind of classic cocktails to use our products to make. However, for the home audience, we try and make sure that there's no barriers. So we recommend simple serves with a mixer. So with tonic or with ginger beer or ginger ale. But that said, yeah, we get so many, so much interesting feedback where people are experimenting. They're trying it. You know, I wouldn't do that necessarily, but I get a lot of joy seeing how people use the product and really enjoy, you know, mixing something with orange juice or making their own cordials, like you say. So that creativity of the home user is inspiring, and it's nice to, you know, I want people to use the product however they see fit. And that goes for the best barman. You know, I don't tell them how to use the product because they're pros. And the same for a home user. You know, if you can enjoy our products on their own, straight up, with a mixer, how we recommend, or experiment yourself, I'm perfectly happy with that.
Yeah. Just to sort of throw a little fly in the ointment here, the low and no alcohol drinks industry seems to be a very, pretty much a positive thing. The only thing that I've heard people say is a possible negative is that, is it a sort of training ground for people who, to start drinking alcohol by trying a non-alcoholic beer? I'm talking about my kids here. So I've got a 16-year-old daughter, loves the idea of drinking. She wants a non-alcoholic drink, and I keep saying, no, I don't want you to have a low-alcohol beer because, you know, for breakfast. No, this is a bad idea. do you think it's a, you know, is it a sort of gateway to then drinking alcohol later on? This is for anyone who...
Well, that like makes a suggestion that alcohol's somehow hard to get hold of and they're not going to get there somehow on their own.
Yeah, I mean, sadly, it's not everywhere. In my house, is it?
It's absolutely everywhere. What's interesting for me is occasionally people will moan that these drinks are age ID'd in the supermarket. And actually, if you go into Michelin Butler, they will age ID you for these as well. Because actually, if the police come in to do a spot check, how can they tell whether the beer in the pint glass is an alcohol-free or an alcoholic? And personally, I think the industry needs to say, yep, 18 is the nice age for that. Because basically, these are adult drinks. This is the market they're designed for.
And is that part of the experience as well?
And I think it's also part of the experience. Another good example is we did pop-up alcohol-free bars for freshers at Bournemouth University. And I can tell you they're not interested in the alcohol-free drinks because they're still not ready for beer. I took craft beer along. Oh, how naive was I? All they wanted was the Copperberg alcohol-free, which, you know, is a very highly sugared product that tastes a bit more like pop. Mm. And so in that respect, they're not ready for those tastes yet anyway. So it's absolutely fine to stick an age ID on. And I think as an industry, we need to be able to say that that's the right place for them as well. And for those big companies that also have an alcoholic product, they want to be really careful about not being seen to be doing that pushing product. Yeah. This industry's got a lot, has the ability to make all of those choices really early before somebody else makes it for them, which the alcohol industry's generally done anyway. And that hasn't been done yet, but I think there needs to be some general consensus around some of that stuff. Yeah. And leave it in that adult space. And then you'll always have those lower sugar soft drinks that are designed for adults that everybody can drink, you know, so you've got the things like Square Root Soda and Corsons, which clearly fit into the soft drink category, but definitely, you know, are designed more for an adult palate, and that's fine, and that's where we can go with it. So.
Okay, I think we probably need to wrap this up now. I mean, I could chat about this for ages, but I particularly love this industry, and I love what you guys are doing with it. But let's end by looking at the future a little bit and working out not just what you think might happen, but what needs to be done to allow this to happen. So, Laura, you've been particularly vocal about the idea that the industry needs to be integrated a little bit more and to have a bit more of a purpose. So what's the future and what would help the industry, do you think?
I think there's still lots of barriers in the way, and we need to understand what they are and how we get over them. It's something we'll be looking at Club Soda this year, both in terms of training of staff in both supermarket and in pubs and bars, but also understanding the market a little bit better, because in amongst all of those broadline figures that Kantar have and stuff is a lot more interesting individual behaviour that goes on in terms of making choices.
A bit of nuance.
Yeah. And of course, people are understanding alcohol free, but they're not understanding low alcohol. But lowering your ABV is another great way to moderate your drinking. It doesn't have to be about alcohol free, but somehow we're very binary in our decisions around this. So those barriers are really important. I think then the industry needs to be able to start to ask the government for things and be proactive and on the front foot. I'm very keen that we take VAT off alcohol-free drinks in pubs and bars, really to deal also with the fact that sugar tax has put some drinks up more expensive than alcohol. Yeah. And in this context, in a pub context, sugar's all right.
Yeah,
the government needs to get it right.
So policy should change, you reckon?
And then the industry needs to come together a little bit better to work out what it needs to do, both people like the wine industry and so on, and decide how they're going to respond and what they're going to do, but also all of those types of drinks together in one place and say, well, actually, here are some things that we should agree on. Here's a manifesto for this space. And that way, those individual producers that have created products like Dash have a bit more of a say, because they've been the innovators in this space, and it's the big companies that are following along. And I think we can begin to treat this sector a bit differently to the way that alcohol's always worked.
Okay. Dash, I'd specifically like to chat about with you as a wrap up about new possible ingredients that are on the horizon. So things like David Nutt's synthetic alcohol substitute, Alcarel, or Alka-Synth, and things like that. Do you think there are specific ingredients that are part of the future, or is it just a state of mind?
I think that, look at what's happening in the meat industry, the dairy industry, massive shifts. I see the same thing happening over time in the alcohol industry. I think that technology, chemistry, biology will play their part. I think that fundamentally people want a good experience, good taste. That's going to be the most important thing. Right. We're also banking on, let's celebrate the incredible thing that is alcohol, ethanol, how important it is for a lot of people in a social environment, bringing people together, allowing them to meet. So that's something that we've taken very seriously, that we wanted to add to our product range, is not just flavor, but having giving you something more. I think over time, I look a lot at what's going on in the cannabis space and what's happening in the States and parts of Europe now. There's a product that will make you feel this, there's a product that will make you feel that. The legislation is complicated, it will take time, but I think it's already happening in Canada and America, where CBD and THC are coming into the alcohol space, with beers especially.
So do you think that the there could be a possible cannabinoid, is that, no,
yep.
Is that the right word?
Yeah, nailed it.
Ingredient in alcohol-free drinks?
Definitely. Definitely.
And more likely to be an alcohol-free, because in some countries they're actually banning CBD with alcohol.
Yeah.
So actually alcohol-free space might be the right space for this.
Yeah, it might be contentious to mix or to recommend mixing these psychoactive compounds.
Cocoa, yeah. but exciting area to explore.
Yeah, I think it's fascinating. I think that's inevitably where it will go. And I think what Laura's mentioned is really important, the figuring out things like age gate, is fascinating, and it's a wild west right now. So it would be interesting and beneficial to everyone if there are some kind of rules that help consumers understand the proposition. Mm-hmm. And, from my point of view, from a product point of view, the key is the quality needs to be high for all of these products and continue to raise the bar, because you don't want people's first experience of non-alc to be a bad one. And I'm sure there's a lot of people out there that have had a very bad experience with a non-alc wine.
The Caliber effect.
Yeah, yeah. And
so, the bad days.
So innovation.
It's still about, you know.
Can you still buy Caliber?
Yeah.
Sorry, Dash.
Look, I've finished. That's it for me.
Okay, fantastic. Now, Andy, pop your future goggles on again. What do you think is likely to happen? Are you looking at brands? Are you looking at ingredients? Or is it just a whole mash of different activities going on?
I think there's a couple of things here. I talked a little bit about pubs and bars before. I think there's still a huge opportunity for those to get on board more and get more in terms of on the fixture in terms of at the bar. Non-alcoholic beers on tap. I still think there's a huge space there for a bit of visibility.
And is that more cash, or is that cash being taken away from one product and being shifted in the spend, or is it actually more income?
It's hard to tell, but I can only speak from my own experience the other night. I stayed in that bar when I was drinking non-alcoholic beer for much longer than I would have if I'd had a soft drink at the start, because I would have got bored of the soft drink and I wasn't going to drink that night. So actually being able to have a few more non-alcoholic beers that night actually kept me in the venue, and I ended up eating as well. So that helps the venue in order to make more money. On that side, certainly pubs and bars, but with wine, I still think there's a big space in here. Laura talked a lot earlier on about the realisation that there is the element of 0.0%, absolutely non-alcoholic, but dilution has an effect here as well. So wine spritzers, actually being able to enjoy wine with something else, another mixer, in order to dilute the liquid to bring the ABV percentage down, and actually have a lower percentage wine and just do what you feel with that drink, is a way that sector in particular can actually drive us a bit more, in my opinion.
And as a corollary to this, I mean, we've been talking a lot about no-alcohol drinks. Yeah. What's happening with the low-alcohol drink sector? Is it just bound up in the same sort of statistics?
Or? Well, yeah, if you take beer as an example in terms of take-home sales that we measure, it's a real divergence in trends, really, in terms of 0 to 0.5% of around the non-alcoholic area has been booming.
Yeah.
Whereas
I don't even know of many low-alcohol beers.
But there's always been table beers around the under 3%, around that 2.5
session beers.
2.5 yeah. session beers. Yeah. But it's like I said, low alcohol needs a little bit of research. Consumer behaviour is very different around it.
Yeah.
We know that people are doing things like making Heineken Zero shandies or Adnams Ghost Ship shandies using half alcoholic and half alcohol free, which is amazing.
I do a bit.
There we are. You heard it here first. So we know that there's a need, but there's definitely a different behaviour, and we haven't worked out what that is yet.
Yeah. I completely agree. That area, there has been some around. It's mostly supermarket own label type drinks that tend to go up to about 2.8%, lower alcoholic beers. But there's nothing really that's of a premium nature in that space. Well, I feel like beer producers can really capitalise on. There's a few that are coming through in the craft area that, you know, specialise in premium beers. But I personally think that is a big opportunity area for beer producers, especially ongoing, and cider producers too.
So thank you very much. That is absolutely fascinating. I'm really looking forward to revisiting this as well over the next couple of years, find out what's happening. So first of all, Andy Crosson, Dash Lilly and Laura Willoughby, thank you so much for all your time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you for listening to the Table Talk podcast. If you've enjoyed it, please share a review. If you like what you've heard, find out more on foodmatterslive.com or find us on Twitter and Facebook.